It's 8 o'clock, Monday, July 19th, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. Good morning, and welcome to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio. Good morning, this is John Duke. I'll be your host until 9 o'clock. My guest today is Twyla Dean from St. Rita's School for the Deaf to talk about garden therapy, why the garden makes you feel good. Also, I have my friend, Master Gardener Bruce Murray, to help out in the studio and jump in on the conversation as well. WAIF FM, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. The opinions expressed during the Master Gardener Hour do not reflect the views of WAIF, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect my own views or the views of my guests, which may change at any moment. It's 8:03, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM, the Real Stepchild Radio, what radio is meant to be. My theme music for the show is Coconuts on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. If you have any comments or suggestions, we invite you to write or call us at the station. Send your letters to WAIF FM, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206. Or call us at 513-749-1444. Okay. Thank you for joining me, Twyla. Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. And good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, John.
Twyla, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, how you got involved at St. Rita's.
Okay. Background. Well, in one of my lives, I worked in a bank, and I was a trainer, and I did middle management training, and I was with the bank for about 10 years, then I went into real estate and sold property for another 10 years, and then I made a decision, hey, you know, life is so wonderfully precious. I think I want to smile more. And I thought, when do I smile? And I thought, gee, whenever I'm in a garden, that's when I smile. So I thought, okay, it's time to start taking more steps in that direction so I can be in an atmosphere where it's easy to smile. So there was a Master Gardener program, and I joined it. And through that program, part of your commitment is, in order to get your certification, that you do some volunteering. And at that time, St. Rita's School for the Deaf was starting their program in the garden, and Master Gardeners were going to go ahead and help them get that running. So that's where I did my volunteer hours, mm-hmm. and that's where I fell in love with St. Rita.
Oh, well, that's quite a story. Yeah. Tell me about St. Rita's in terms of their gardening and how the kids are involved. And
right. The garden is now part of the school's curriculum. So we have kindergarten and sometimes preschool through the eighth grade come down to the garden itself, 45 minutes, one class per week is the garden and greenhouse class. The older children we have from high school, they will have classes periodically, and then we all get together for our fall celebration and also for Earth Day. And that's probably the biggest event of the year for me is Earth Day. I love that.
Now what do you do at Earth Day? I thought Earth Day was in the spring.
It is in the spring, yes. It's last year it was April 22nd,
yeah.
I believe. Yes. Uh-huh. What we do on Earth Day, we develop our own theme. Earth Day always puts out a theme. Like I think it was this year, Earth Day every day. Every day mm-hmm. is Earth Day, something along those lines. With us, we develop our own theme so we can actually have subject matter to study and to influence the children with and have them be involved with. And so our theme was respect for all living things. And with that, obviously, that's plant life, that's animal, mm-hmm. insect, all those wonderful worlds of nature. So we expose the children to about 12 specific different topics. And they would go, like, from place to place to learn about these topics. Now, we were rained out this year, unfortunately. We did not get to spend time in the garden, which was the first time that that happened.
Oh, yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, you know, since I've been there. And I was kind of sad about that. But then a good thing happened. We set it up in the gym, and it became a science fair. It just turned into a wonderful event. And
uh-huh.
it almost, in a way, evokes maybe thinking that we might want to do that in the future, maybe something else. But it was a great learning opportunity. We had herbs, diversity in plants, diversity in birds and insects. It was fabulous. We had bouncing rocks. We had worms that taste good. We did as much fun things as we possibly could.
Well, that's good. Do you describe the garden?
Oh, the garden. The garden
has... I know
has,
it's developed
okay,
over time.
Yes. Okay. When we first started, our main reason for being there as master gardeners to volunteer was to add plants to the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that over a course of time from people's backyards. We rescued plants from compost bins from nurseries. So that's how we mm-hmm. acquired it, and just little bit by little bit. Now, consequently, when you, it's a hodgepodge, you know, you don't have like mass plantings necessarily like a typical landscape would be.
Uh-huh.
But I like to think of our garden as having personality. When you go into it, it speaks to you in a different way than perhaps a park garden mm-hmm. might speak to you. And in thinking about this, John, I think about your garden with all your daylilies mm-hmm. and all of your interesting paraphernalia all over, and now your train, which I haven't gotten to see. But your garden also, it has a character to it. It's you there. With our garden, it's all of our students. They now are a part of it, and their personalities are the personality of the garden.
Yeah, and they the students, of course, there's an educational dimension.
Absolutely.
There too.
Oh,
they're
yes.
learning about the plants and mm-hmm. How to plant them and how to care for them and so forth. And
oh.
they own the place.
Yes, they do.
That's important.
Yes.
It's their garden.
Oh, it's couldn't be more perfect.
Yeah.
And what we do in the wintertime, obviously, when we can't be outside, we start our seeds in our small greenhouse.
Uh-huh.
So everything that you come down and see in the garden that happens to be an annual, we have started from seed.
Oh,
and they do
good.
Impatiens,
yeah.
Geraniums, snapdragons, just anything and everything that you can think of. This year we did the sensitive plant, the plant that you touch
oh,
and
yeah.
curls
yeah.
up.
Uh-huh.
Oh, they
They're
love
fun.
That.
Yeah.
That is like the most exciting thing. They all run down, and then they take turns touching it, and then they wait for it to uncurl again so they can touch it again.
That's a great lot
of fun.
And you have a little greenhouse there, too, that's
yes.
so you can keep those kinds of tropical plants over.
Yes.
And the kids can learn about the greenhouse and
oh yeah
and all that stuff. That's great. I was privileged when a couple of years ago, I guess, to come over there and mm-hmm. teach a couple of classes to the kids, and they're really great. They really are.
Oh, they're
wonderful.
Very receptive.
And you yes. know, it occurred to me, thinking about garden therapy, that for people that have a hearing loss or hearing impaired, that is probably the least of our senses that we use in the garden.
That's correct.
And as I understand it, people who have lost one of their senses tends to amplify the use of the others.
Yes.
So those kids probably more aware of the colors and fragrances and textures and all that kind of stuff than ordinary hearing people.
Exactly. And they do pick up on beauty very definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or when something is in disrepair or needs to be corrected. And that reminds me of when the students came back last year. One of our signs had started to peel. It was showing where Mr. and Mrs. Groundhog reside. We have this huge hole in the ground. Instead of trying to correct nature, we live with nature.
Yes.
You know, whatever's happening, we make use of, turn lemons into lemonade kind of thing.
Path of least resistance.
Yes, exactly. So we thought, okay, now if we get rid of this groundhog hole, well, it's just going to make another one, and uh-huh. we don't want to go through the process of trapping, whatever. So anyway, we put up a sign, Mr. and Mrs. Groundhog, and the paint was peeling. So as students asked me through signing, she doesn't uh-huh. speak at all, and she asked if she could take it home and redo it.
Oh,
so I gave
okay.
it to her. In the very next class period, she brought it back
and
put it up,
yeah.
and it was like, oh, it's just great. So they notice when things need to be fixed, and they offer to fix it, or they make a suggestion. And if something is beautiful and enjoyable, then we all stop and, mm-hmm. and we show that appreciation. We take time to look at the beauty that's in the garden.
Yeah.
And you're right, as far as the kind of therapy that it can be for a hearing impaired mm-hmm. person or a child with no hearing at all, that type... When that happens to a person, it can be extremely frustrating as far as communicating with the hearing world
mm-hmm.
and participating with the hearing world. You're at what we would look at as a disadvantage.
Sure.
There's a time lag between speaking the word and signing the word.
Yes.
And sometimes signs can... be not quite as explicit as perhaps a word might be.
Uh-huh.
So there's a little delay in just the recognition and the comprehension. And that can be extremely frustrating, especially for a very bright child. And the garden, what the garden does, it takes that element away. There's none of that pressure, none of that trying to figure
uh-huh.
out. In a garden, when you... Our process mostly involves showing a child how to do something. So you visually, like planting, you show them how to take it out of a cell pack if it's been
mm-hmm.
planted in a cell pack, how to hold on to the plant gently, how to have the hole prepared, you know, how you're going to water it afterwards, where the placement's
yeah.
going to be. All of that is very visual, which they can comprehend immediately.
Well, it's hands-on teaching, which
and
is
they,
a good
And
way.
They grasp yeah. it immediately. There's
mm-hmm.
no time lag. They understand. Totally.
Yeah. Well,
and
that,
so.
Now you sign.
Yes. Gradually, I learned.
Yeah. I we tried to get something going with St. Rita's and Landfair Retirement Community so that the kids could come over and spend some time with
yes.
the residents.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to get the residents to learn how to sign, and it just didn't work.
It's hard.
It's very hard.
Very hard, yes.
I got a little bit of it, but. I can see where it'd take a long time to really get fluent.
Yes, and you have to be aware, I think with signing, one of the things is you, in order to really understand what somebody is signing to you, you have to understand what the topic is.
Right.
And if your eyes have just diverted for a minute, you know, off of them, you've missed maybe
mm-hmm.
the main topic. So it's going to be a little while for you to pick
sure.
up on that again.
Yeah.
So you have to give total focus, visual focus
mm-hmm.
to that sign. And everybody, just like everybody, speaks a little bit different. Sometimes people sign a little
with
bit
an
different.
Accent.
Yeah, with an accent.
Wow.
So after you see somebody sign for a while, you sort of pick
yeah.
up those little differences.
Yeah. Well, I certainly experienced that time delay when I was teaching
yes.
class over there because I don't sign,
mm-hmm.
and I had to have a translator
yes.
to communicate,
yeah.
and it took about twice as long to cover the same material, just,
mm-hmm.
you know, conversationally.
Yeah.
And so the hands-on thing is a way to cut through all that. I think that's great.
Oh, it's wonderful. And thinking about therapy, I guess... With children, it's not a whole lot different than it is with an adult. I think the therapy of a garden, for me, is and for some other adults that I know, are the physical activity.
Yeah.
Okay. Is also the beauty, just noticing the beauty around. Like, I don't know of an ugly plant. Even a weed can be beautiful and is beautiful. And then sometimes the combination of the two. And the other, I mean, both the beauty and the physical activity. And also, I've noticed that with them, they can effect a change. They can see that when they've done something that there is a change. Now, that's different than immediate self-gratification. You don't get that in a garden all the time. But you can go to a garden and see that it needs to be mulched or weeded,
sure,
or edged. And you can accomplish that, and you can stand back and actually see what your work has done, that you have given something to a garden, and visually you can see the result of that. And I think for a child, it gives them that sense of success. And like I mentioned, some of our students just love the physical activity and they zero in on that. The other students, sometimes when a child touches a plant, you can see that some, just like adults, some children and some adults have a special reverence for that plant, and you can spot that.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I comment, like, wow, you really understand how to handle that, you know, and to do that process of planting, that's, you know, quite wonderful. And they'll say, oh, yes, my grandpa says I have a green thumb. You know, so it's kind of, you know, they take up on that kind of thing, too. And you can spot it. It's very easy to spot how a garden can resonate differently with different people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way it works, you know. Did you realize that garden therapy was discovered accidentally?
No. And who discovered it?
Well, way back in the 1700s, indigent people that had a health problem or were in the hospital, indigent people were expected, when they got a little better, to go work in the garden.
All right.
And what they found, some astute observers, was that they got well a lot faster than the wealthy people who were just laying on their back in the hospital. And so it kind of started from there, and they found out that, you know, spending time in the garden, working in the garden, is very helpful in recovering from a lot of different things.
And don't you think it's partially maybe because it takes the focus off of yourself and it puts the focus someplace else?
Yeah, well, I think it gets back to nature.
Yes.
You know, all our bodily functions, our blood pressure and heart rate, mm-hmm, and respiration, and all that kind of stuff evolved when we were living as hunter-gatherers on the African savannas. That's when we were calibrated. And now we've gotten civilized, and we get away from nature. But when we go back, I think all those bodily functions tend to normalize a little bit. I think that's part of our genes.
Yeah.
Bruce?
Yeah, I think I can make another point here, is when you're doing something in the garden, that gives you an expectation for something in the future. You plant something,
oh, yeah,
and you have something to look forward,
hope,
to, and something that's going to grow, and you want to focus on that future, and you want to be there for that future. You want to be healthier.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Okay, I wanted to ask you also, Twyla, what kind of feedback do you get from the kids? I know you see their excitement and the impact,
yeah,
the garden or being in the garden has on, but what kind of feedback do you get from them about that?
Okay, feedback. Well, my okay, I don't know if this is what you're looking for. The feedback I most enjoy are the hugs. Okay, that's what I enjoy. That means so much to me. Whenever I see them and I can see their eyes light up and their face just become very open. And that is wonderful feedback. When I see that they are excited about coming down to the garden.
Yeah.
Where they're not slowly dragging their feet to come down. They're coming as quickly as they possibly can. You know, they're eager. Their eagerness is probably one of the best feedback. Mm-hmm. Another feedback that I get, which I'm not a teacher by trade necessarily. It's just a position that I'm in right now. I'm helping teachers. So in, mm-hmm, effect, you know, I'm like, mm-hmm, a teacher aide, more or less. And with that, I never understood why a teacher wanted to be a teacher, because it's not anything I've ever wanted to do. But now I know a little bit, because when a child remembers something that you've told them, and they're able to repeat it a year later, I can't tell you how good that feels inside, that somehow you've touched a memory chord with that child. And perhaps one thing that it was the strongest to me was this little girl by the name of Jennifer. She was in the sixth grade when we had a tour in the garden. And we had sectioned off students in different parts of the garden because it was too big of a garden. We have three quarters of an acre, too big of a garden for one student to really be in charge of to be able to tell people about. We had her stationed by the herb garden, by the seed garden where annuals are, and by the butterfly garden where perennials are. Well, when she came, that was 1 year. Now, the following year, she came back to school. When we were walking through the garden, she stopped in the area that was her section of the garden, and she began to tell me every single thing about each and every one of those. She said, annuals live for 1 year, and then they die. Perennials, we have to cut down this butterfly bush, and it will get over 6 feet high as it grows again. And then the herbs, it's for medicine, it's for taste, it's for aroma, it's the smell. And she went on and on, and I thought, oh, my goodness. Yeah, I thought, this child, this garden really makes an impact.
Yeah.
So it touches, and the feedback I get is, I guess, not necessarily always a direct feedback, although there are direct feedbacks. I get cards from parents saying, you know, my child enjoyed your class so much. Thank you.
That's great.
So these types of things you get as feedback. Yeah. But I think when the students feedback what they've done, their experiences in the garden or what they've learned, that has probably the biggest impact on me.
Yeah. About how many students are we talking about?
Okay, we have probably that come down to the garden.
Yeah.
Okay, not the whole school, but what come down to the garden is approximately 70 a week.
Oh, wow.
Now, we have small classes, and so that's quite a few.
A
few classes.
A lot of classes.
And we just have the best time. There is so much to learn from the garden, you know. There's so, it's incredible, just the patience that's involved in it. It stretches you to grow in ways that maybe perhaps ordinarily you would not have done. I think one of the things I enjoy most about gardening is that it's not under complete control. I mean, nature has a big part of it.
Oh, yeah.
So sometimes you have these wonderful plans. Yes.
This reminds me of somebody talking about garden therapy versus art therapy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they said, you know, the difference is that crayons don't die.
Yeah, right. That's so true. And it is when you're doing some things, you know, you're so used to having complete control of your little environment, whatever it might be. But in a garden, you don't. And sometimes things happen that you're not prepared for, and I like to look at that as a creative challenge. Now something wonderful is going to occur because nature has involved itself in this, and I can't wait to see what that's going to turn out to be. You know, so it becomes really extremely creative.
Okay. About how long do the kids get to spend in the garden when they come down?
45 minutes. Which goes very, very quickly, because in a garden, you know, getting your tools, your gloves, understanding what your process, I mean, what's your project.
What are we doing today? Yeah.
Yes, and I always call it the project, so they always come down, oh, Twyla, what's our project today? What are we going to do? And they enjoy that because it sets out in front of them, you know, this particular job, whatever, this is what our focus is. And now, students, it's up to you to figure out how we're going to do this process.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, if they're younger, perhaps I'll help them along those lines. Otherwise, sometimes I'll let them decide how we're going to work through this.
Mm-hmm.
And they will come up with things far better than I could have come up with as far as the cooperation between themselves.
Yeah.
Working as a team in a garden builds a lot of team feelings, and they all really help one another to accomplish something, and they take turns and they do all those wonderful things that we have to learn later in life to do too.
Yeah. Well, you know, garden therapy has gotten over the years in some cases very formalized. I mean, there are very structured garden therapy programs with goals and measures and all that kind of stuff in certain institutional settings like retirement communities or hospitals or prisons, reformatories, all kinds of institutions have gotten very formalized with it. Now, my sense is that St. Rita's is not that formal. It's more informal in terms of just allowing the things to happen in the garden with the students.
Exactly. This may, perhaps to some people, sound strange, but I let the garden dictate what we're going to learn.
Uh-huh.
And just taking a walk in the garden, you can spot different things. For instance, right now, our friendship garden, which got its name because of plants that people gave us, friends to us,
mm-hmm.
they're perennials, so as they grow, we in turn will divide those plants and share them with other garden friends. And looking at the friendship garden right now, it's overcrowded.
Uh-huh.
It is so crowded. So to me, that's dictating it's time to learn how to divide our plants, how to share our plants.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I structured like, okay, in the year 2004, in the month of, in the week of, this is what our activity is going to be. No, it's like the time is right now to have this happen. And when the students come back in the fall, one of the other things we'll be doing with our friendship garden as well is taking up some plants and sharing it with another children's garden that just was opened in Hamilton County, and Glendale Gardens.
Oh, yeah.
They have a children's garden. Yes,
yeah.
So we will be giving them some plants, too. So our children can see, look, this can benefit other children. And in addition to that, we'll be sharing the plants with our teachers and other employees at school and anybody
great.
Else that might
well,
need
Well, you're touching on this teamwork and the sharing. And all this comes centered around the garden.
Yes.
And I guess I'm just real pleased to hear that you seem to be doing such a great job over there. You know, being a caring person doesn't necessarily make you a good therapist.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And I think you're doing a great job with those kids.
Thank you.
So, proud to know you.
Oh, thank you. It's fun.
Okay. Let's take a little break for a minute, and Bruce, you've got some information for us.
Absolutely. A couple of things to say about some of my favorite subjects. Twyla was talking about Earth Day as we started, and as a former chemist, one of my things is to think about pollution and how we simply as homeowners can pollute. And here in Hamilton County and Cincinnati, one of the things that one of the ways we do pollute is with throwing cleaning products, throwing chemicals down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody has any questions about disposing of cleaning products or other home chemicals down the drain, one thing we should do first is call the Cincinnati Metropolitan Sewer District, and that's at 513-244-5500. And throwing away chemical products can actually do a lot of harm from our homes. And the other thing I'll talk about this morning is Bicentennial Commons. As a riverfront resident, I only live three blocks from the river. One of the things I love to do is cross the Purple People Bridge to Bicentennial Gardens Commons in the morning. And this is a beautiful 22-acre riverfront recreational area. There are things that can be done here. And on the riverfront, we have in the city of Cincinnati lighted tennis courts, volleyball courts, a play area for kids. In fact, there's a brand new play area that was built under the Daniel Beard Bridge, and a skating rink. Concerts are scheduled during the summer months, and that's generally Wednesdays that they call Party in the Park. And for information, if you want information on the concerts and other recreational events, call 352-6316. And finally, as far as WAIF, what radio should be, living in Newport with a very Italian government and the Italian festival, I'll point out Italia Eri Oggi. Mamma Mia, treat your ears to a musical tour of Italy. Listen every Tuesday night. That's Tuesday night from 6 to 7. Italia Aerei Oggi, the Italian radio show that brings you music from yesterday and today here on WAIF.
Okay, thank you very much. It's 8:30, and you're listening to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio, with your host John Duke and my guest Twyla Dean from St. Rita's and Master Gardener Bruce Murray on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour here every Monday this summer from 8 to 9 a.m. I want to just mention a couple of things before we get back to Twyla that I ran across this week. One of them is pertains to gardeners and some kind of alarming information about tetanus. According to this article I read, that 53% of the adults over age of 20 are not or are no longer protected against tetanus. You need to get a booster shot every 10 years. And most people over 60, that's more than 50% of the people over 60, who've never received the initial immunization are totally unprotected. And you can get tetanus very easily working in the garden, little scrapes and bruises and stuff. So I encourage everybody to get checked out on your tetanus shots and keep them up to date. Tetanus can be fatal in one case out of 10, which is not a risk I want to take. So I just wanted to mention that as for all our gardening listeners. Twyla?
Yes.
I told you the story about how horticultural therapy, garden therapy, was discovered, but actually it's been known for quite some time. And I don't know how you are on your Greek mythology, but
fill me in. Yeah, okay.
Hercules.
Okay.
Everybody's heard of Hercules. He did a bad thing, and so the gods assigned him 12 major tasks to redeem himself, and one was fighting the multi-headed Medusa and a man-eating lion and a bunch of other things that he did because he was a big tough guy, and there was a particular. I think it was probably the last one that he did. He was supposed to go up against this fellow by the name of Antaeus. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that even right, because wasn't familiar with this when I read it. But this was a kind of an evil guy, and he was the son of Earth and Poseidon, okay, which figures prominently in the story. And so Hercules went up against him and challenged him to a wrestling match. And every time Hercules would throw him onto the ground, he would come back even stronger. And Hercules finally figured out that it was because of his contact with the earth, his mother, gave him strength. And so he ended up by just holding him up above his head until he gave up and defeated him that way. But I think the ancient Greeks and Romans knew that touching the earth provided strength for people.
I so agree. Yeah.
So, just thought I'd just pass that little story. I like to tell stories. What are some of your favorite plants that you have over there in the garden, or the kids' favorite plants? I guess would be more to the point.
Okay. It's a love-hate relationship with a rose. So I would have to say. Rose comes to mind first,
okay.
Being that, and this again, you don't realize, I'm in a great advantage that I can observe students as they come down into the garden, and I can see what draws them, and maybe what things they may not notice, or what things they like to do. And one thing I noticed was this young boy, he would come down into the garden. He is also legally blind. And wow. I had asked all the students, please name three of your favorite places in the garden. And his very first one was the roses. And afterwards, I thought, now, why on earth would he pick the rose? And then I realized the rose is elevated from the ground. visually, he can see it because it was eye level.
Mm-hmm.
And he could look at it versus the plant that's on the ground and maybe further away, which may be a blur to him. So to him, it was the rose was the beautiful thing. Now, of course, the downside are the thorns and running into it and getting hurt and whatnot. So this year, unfortunately, our roses died.
Hybrid teas?
Okay, yes. I mean, and they died. It got, I think it was... The place where we had it, obviously, was not the best. It was too much moisture, not enough sun. Well, somebody gave us another rose bush, and which is great. They just did this past week. So now it's been put in a different place to where you're down on the path. You can see it, so nobody's going to get hurt because it sits back, but yet it's still at eye level. So I would say that that's beautiful to the students. The students... Their favorite plants overall are the herbs. They absolutely love it. They love to touch them, to smell it. To smell it. And have you ever worked in an herb garden after a rainy day? It is total heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to during the summer the students aren't there. So we depend heavily on our master gardeners, any other additional volunteers that come our way. And our spearmint, as you know, will grow rampant. So I was cleaning out the spearmint after rain and putting it into the trash. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is heaven. Next time it rains, I'm bringing all the students down here in the herb garden, you know, so they can just walk through it and just, you know, touch it and pull and do whatever. And that whole day, I had the aroma of that spearmint on me. Not only that, but all the other herbs. And so I would have to say that the herb garden is perhaps their absolute most. We've made wreaths from them, and then we talk about the medicine that have been used. And this is great to bring in the history. I mean, herbs, years ago, if you think about the cavemen and no refrigerators, et cetera, well, somehow they stumbled across sage and rosemary, and mostly because they didn't like to stink of rotting meat. So they would kind of put these very strong herbs with them, and then they started to discover, wow, if we wrap up our meat in sage and rosemary, it actually prolongs the freshness of this meat. So they began to do that. And then once refrigerators come along, well, then we just use it for the flavor.
Yeah.
And being able to tell the history of the herbs helps the students to understand where we've come from. And one of the other ones is like, I say, oh, wow, if your house smells, you know, what does your mom or dad do? Oh, they get out the air freshener. They spray it. I said, well, you know, years ago, they didn't have that. And they had dirt floors in their homes. And sometimes it would have an odor. So they would take these strewing, what we call strewing herbs, which smell nice, and they would crush them and they would spread them out on the floor. You know, so, and the medicine, we didn't have a pharmacy. We didn't have the doctor. We didn't have any of that. We had to have our own things, you know, to help if we had a cut or if we had a headache or a fever. You know, we relied on our own plants to do that. So it's great with a garden. You can go into almost anything. Math is excellent to figure out math problems in a garden, which you like, you know, math. But we sell tulips. And one of my math problems I love is like there's 60 bulbs to a box. And we've got two boxes. And we want to put three bulbs to a pot. Now, how many pots are you going to get and wash and clean to be ready? If I were your boss, this is your assignment. You need to figure this out because this is how we make our income. We need to be prepared to do this correctly. Oh, wow. You know, when you put it in real life terms like that, then you have to really think. But hopefully the message is, you're going to use math.
It's practical math.
It's practical math.
Yeah,
that's right. We need this every day. You may not think it's so great, but it's very important to function in the real world with this.
Boy, it seems to me like a lot of the kids anymore, you know, can't make change.
Exactly. Yeah, we rely on computers and calculators. Yes.
Well, now, talking about your herbs and probably some of your other plants there, too, over the winter, when they're not growing, do you collect the dried plant material to do crafty things with? And
yes, we do. We also bring some of the herbs in. We have scented geraniums, which are not like the beautiful flowering geraniums. Mm-hmm. The leaves are scented. So they're annuals, and we do bring them in. We keep them alive. We've kept them alive for 4 years now. And I'm going to try it with rosemary, although mealybugs kind of like rosemary, and it might be a little bit tough, but I found a way to conquer that. So I think we might try that again. And, yes, we do a lot of craft-type things. And when we do a craft, it's not just a craft for its sake, we also bring in the learning aspect of something. And because there is always something else to learn about it.
Absolutely.
And herbs, also, the older classes this year, they grew their own herbs in pots, and it became their Mother's Day present. And they had to identify each of the herbs before we allowed it to go home.
Uh-huh.
We said, please identify these herbs, you know, which is which. And, boy, they just caught on immediately, and they retained that information.
Yeah.
So when they took it home, they could say, you know, which herb was which. And, of course, we have some additional information for them to take home as well.
I'll have to share with you an interesting plant story about plant identification.
Yes.
We got this plant that started growing up at the corner of our garage, and it was really pretty. It had these huge leaves on it. I mean, the lower leaves on the thing were, you know, 18 inches long almost. And it was a pretty plant, kind of pyramidal shaped. And we didn't plant it. I don't know what it was. And I asked all of my high-powered gardening friends who identify all kinds of plants, if they knew what it was. Nobody knew what it was until finally Mike Clare over at Boone County, good old country boy, he says, that's burdock.
Oh.
But it's a beautiful plant.
Yeah.
But I got to make sure it doesn't spread.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty plant. It's just now starting to bloom. Got little purple blooms on it. And the burrs are really interesting. The little needle-shaped points on the burr actually have a tiny little hook on the end. It works like Velcro when you walk past it. If you brush up against it, it'll try to snag you.
Uh-huh.
And it's a pretty interesting plant, but it's gone as soon as before the seeds set, anyway. Okay. You said earlier that you get about 70 kids a week exposed in the garden. What about other kids? Or do they not participate in that, or what's a...
Well, again, it's a different type of curriculum in high school, although some do come down because we have the science.
Uh-huh.
If they still have credits for science, then the science teachers will bring them down. We have art classes, and they will come down to the garden. So they also have that exposure. And like I mentioned, the two times a year with the whole school.
Okay, so they don't get it every year in school. They get it.
It can be, well, once they're in high school, it can be different.
Yeah.
When they're in the grade school, K through 8th grade, then it's every single week.
Okay.
Yeah, they come down. So it's a little bit different. Not that I haven't had the high school classes, because
I know
you were there.
Yeah,
The high school class was magnificent. In the fact that I personally was a little bit concerned, because I can remember being a teenager myself, and the peer pressure that comes with that, and then, you know, being attracted at that time to boys, and boys being attracted to girls, and not wanting to get, you know, to look your best. And so I thought, oh, these girls are not going to want to get dirty, they won't want to get sweaty, they won't want to do, but they did everything I asked them to do.
Well, there's that element of sex in the garden.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Propagation?
More therapy.
Propagation.
Okay.
The plants do it.
Plants do it. Bees do it. Yes, okay. Very good, John. You got me on that one. You woke me totally up, and I'm sure everybody out there. Okay.
And absolutely, this year was the biggest year for sex in the garden with the cicadas, basically.
Oh, yes, it certainly was.
You had a bunch of teenagers climbing trees to have sex.
Yes. Oh, we did. We had them climbing down our necks. I mean, we had an overload of cicadas.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that the real little kids loved them, but then slightly in the middle age group kids did not like them, and then the older kids loved them. Yeah. So it was kind of, you know, just depend on where they were. But, yeah, we were loaded with our cicadas.
Twyla, I have a couple of questions. One's somewhat whimsical, and the other one is a practical question. First, the whimsical question. As you were introducing yourself in the garden this morning, you talked about worms that taste good.
Yeah.
Could you expound on that a little bit? And I know as a master gardener, I can go and I can volunteer and I can help the gardens at St. Rita's. But the question is there something that the general public can do to work in the garden, help you with the kids?
First question, yes, the whimsical, worms that taste good. What that was were gummy worms, and we put them on top of chocolate cupcakes so it looked like dirt. And our cafeteria, I call them the beautiful women. Okay, the beautiful women made these wonderful chocolate cupcakes, and some of them even put the gummy worms up like a snake. So it was so colorful, and it was so wonderful. But we pre-advertised the Earth Day as having bouncing rocks that bounce and worms that taste good to kind of create, like, what is she talking about now? But again, it's that excitement, that looking forward to something, and then the surprise when you do see it. The other one, yes, the public. We welcome people. We have college students that come and volunteer. We have, I've had church groups come. One came up from Georgia this year. And what this church group did, it's a Methodist church, I thought was wonderful. They go on trips every year to a different place so they can explore that locale. But their trip involves volunteering. So this year, I don't know how, but they picked St. Rita.
Great.
And they came there, and they worked, and they worked, and they really worked. And she was happy because she says it was great that you had all these jobs for us. And,
yeah.
And so, yes, we have the public be involved. We welcome volunteers. If they want to come and teach a class, they can come teach a class. If they have an expertise in something that they would like to share, that's wonderful for our students because, again, it shows community involvement.
Yeah.
And we do promote.
Now, you, of course, are located right there on Glendale-Milford Road, right at I-75.
Yes.
Just west of I-75.
Yes.
And is there a telephone number that somebody interested in volunteering could call?
Certainly. It's 771-7600. My extension is 333.
Okay.
Yes.
And so they call Twyla Dean.
Yes.
And say, what can I do to help? That's good.
Another thing, if I could...
Yeah.
Put out is that we do give tours down in the garden too at no cost. So if a group is interested in walking through our gardens and learning about our gardens, or I have also given presentations to different groups, and it's a wonderful way to acquaint people with the kinds of things that we do at St. Rita, but also hopefully that they might get ideas with their own children or children that they come into contact with. Because for me, all grandmas and grandpas out there just know how heavily you can influence the younger generation through gardening. The fondest memories I have, one is of my grandma sitting in a porch swing and myself with her and cracking green beans in the summertime. And just the smell, the sweetness of that smell, and just the quietness and the slowness of that activity was not that we did a lot of talking. It was just a beautiful sharing. So there's so many things. And I had a mother come down to the garden last week with three of her children, one hearing impaired. And the mother, as she was leaving the garden, said, "Oh, my father loved to garden." And it sounded as though he was no longer here.
Yeah.
He had passed on.
Yeah.
Even though she didn't say that, I got the impression. And she had said, "It was so wonderful to come down here and see all these things." And what I personally imagined is that she had the opportunity to share her dad with her children, which happens to be their grandpa. She shared their grandpa with them in a very beautiful, beautiful manner. So the garden can lend itself to create these memories that will be lasting memories.
Yeah.
And these little children also had always wanted a cattail, but the mother could never stop because they would see it along the highway. And she'd say, no, we can't stop. Here's the expressway. So they would go by, and they noticed that we had some, so they asked permission if they could have one. I said, of course. So each of those little girls got a cattail sleeve. Now, don't you think they'll always remember that?
Sure.
And somehow that'll bring a smile to their face when they get older, that a garden is a wonderful place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many marvelous things.
Now, you've got a railroad garden there, too.
Oh, we
do.
And that evokes laughter and giggles and screams of joy. We had a senior citizen group come down and tour the garden.
Uh-huh.
You wouldn't believe all of these older people laughing and carrying on when they saw this.
Everybody seems to like a railroad garden.
Love
it's amazing.
They love it. And one said, my brother keeps his railroad in his basement. Yeah. I'm going to tell him to put it outside where everybody can see it. So, yes, the railroad is just, talk about whimsical. It's just a wonderful. The children have fun. And I enjoy hearing their screams and their laughter, and they love sharing it. And it's an interactive kind of a railroad too. So they have to do things.
What do you mean interactive?
We have a trolley. We have two different lines. One is for the regular train line. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And it loops around.
Okay.
The other one is a trolley line.
Oh.
So you start the trolley. So they have to turn the switch. So they start it, and then it ends, and they make it come back again. But it turned out to be, again, one of those team effort ones because you visually cannot see when it stopped.
Oh.
And there's no light that goes up. So it's so cute because they set it up themselves. One will be the lookout on one end, one will be a lookout on the other, and one will be there at the control.
Okay.
And then they'll tell them, you know, somehow mm-hmm. through their hand motions
signal
to go
and
ahead
forth.
And start it again that it's there.
Yeah.
So they go back and forth. That's right. It's interactive on
that. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Okay. I want to take a break here for just a minute and talk about a couple of upcoming events. That the public might be interested in. One of them is the Warren County Fair. It starts today, actually, through the 24th. It's at the Warren County Fairgrounds. To learn more about it, you can call 932-2636. And the Boone County Fair is coming up next month. It's August 9th through the 14th, I believe. And to learn more about that, you can call 859-586-6101. And the Hamilton County Fair is August 4th through the 8th. And I also want to mention again this week a very special place down in Price Hill, Imago. It's a nonprofit ecological organization. And they're having a fundraiser July 31st from 7 to 11. They're having a silent auction and games and activities and food and live music. And you can call that Imago and find out about that at 921-8455. Next week, my guest is going to be Jim Hansel, who's a very brilliant plantsman. Knows about a lot of things, but we're going to talk about grasses, at least for part of the time, and don't tell them what else, and what to watch for in the garden, because if you look very closely in your garden, you'll see that there are some things that maybe you haven't noticed before, and we're going to talk about what some of those might be. So tune in next week to learn about how to enjoy your garden more. And did you know that WAIF depends on you, our listeners, for financial support? We are an all-volunteer nonprofit community radio station. For only $15, you can become a member of WAIF FM. You can join on the webpage at www.waif883.org, and so we hope you'll do that. If you want to listen to some of the previous Master Gardener Hour programs, you can go to the American Compost Society webpage, and that's at www.writethisforme.com/ACS. And there's a link on that to go to the Master Gardener Hour. And so that's the announcements, I guess. Thank you, Twyla, for coming. Do you have any final thoughts?
Oh, final thoughts. Oh, dear.
This is not a quiz.
Okay, that's good. Well, gardening has changed my life. And one of the things I always wanted to do with gardening was to share it with children. And I just consider it extremely fortunate that I happen to be in that position.
You're doing what you want to do.
Exactly. That's I'm great. Doing totally what I want to do. Uh-huh. And it's a great love to be able to share something that you love with children that you admire and love. And these kids are just fabulous.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Bruce, you have any final words of wisdom?
Not too much. It's good to hear about St. Rita's. I've been aware of them, and some of the master gardeners from my class have been volunteering at St. Rita's. And unfortunately, at this point, I haven't had the time to get there. But
well, you've been doing the Purple People Bridge and
absolutely
and other things that we're going to talk about next week, I guess.
Yeah, the Purple People Bridge is a very important part of my life. I run in the mornings and cross the bridge, and Sawyer Point and Bicentennial Park are great. One of the best things about the waterfront on the Cincinnati side this year, and it was open last year, is the Theater Barry International Park. And maybe we can talk with Jim Hansel about
that's
this.
The Underground Railroad?
No, the Underground Railroad's actually west. The Berry Park is to the east, just beyond the Montgomery Inn.
Yeah.
And if you want to see some beautiful ornamental grasses, that is the place to go this year. The entire park is about, I'll say it's more than a quarter mile long along the river.
Uh-huh.
And it opened last year, and then later in the year last year they put in an interesting, I'll call it sculpture. Basically it's some tree trunks, and they are aligned so that the sun hits them at certain points, and one of them has a hole, and the sun will come through the hole and at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
Made out of wood, yes. And there's another beautiful sculpture this year that they put in. But the ornamental grasses are just tremendous as far as what they've done this year.
Uh-huh.
But if you haven't been down on the Cincinnati waterfront, it's a place to go and a place to really enjoy yourself, especially east, just beyond the Montgomery Inn.
Nice weather we're having, too, is good time to do that.
Absolutely, especially the cool mornings.
Yeah. Have you had much rain where you are?
Not too much in the past few weeks. It has been kind of dry.
Either. We've been very dry, and maybe I ought to pass along to any gardeners out there to start paying attention to your watering. The rule of thumb I always use is that is the number 62. Because in order to put 1 inch of water on 100 square feet, it takes 62 gallons.
Uh-huh.
That's some garden math.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've got a 2-gallon-a-minute hose, you're going to have to stand there for about a half an hour to water properly 100 square feet. So, okay. I'll start our music up here and start our way out. Theme music for the show is Coconuts on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. This has been the Master Gardener Hour with John Duke. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour every Monday morning this summer from 8 to 9 a.m. on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. All we ask is 1 hour a week. We welcome your comments and suggestions, so please send a note to WAIF 1434 West McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio. Care of the Master Gardener Hour. I'll be back next Monday. My guest will be Jim Hansel with great gardening information. That's only 167 hours from now, so make it count. And stay tuned for One Voice. Take care of yourself, your garden needs you, and thanks for listening.